are listening to FBC Perspective, a podcast from First Baptist Church Kelowna.
Hello, and welcome to our Perspective podcast, where we talk about things that help us live better lives. My name is Kevin, I'm your host, and I'm really glad you could join us today. I want to ask you how your relationships are doing in this pandemic, but in general, how are they doing? I think that most of us know on some level that good, strong relationships help us live better lives, yet still they can be so hard. Even believing that and trying our best, we can still struggle. And it's sometimes the relationships that matter the most to us that we find the most difficult. It can be confusing and frustrating. And maybe we can find ourselves trapped in ruts or well-worn grooves. And what I mean by that is that we can live in patterns of relating to other people that are habitual and don't help us or the other person flourish. In fact, they can hinder us from living better lives, even if we deeply love the people in the relationships we're struggling with. So we are going to talk about that today. And I hope you come away from here today ready to think about some of these things and be inspired to make some changes to see your relationships become more real and healthy and authentic. Today we have Mark Gordon as our guest. Mark lives in Kelowna, BC, and has been a lead pastor for many years. He's also been involved in many business ventures. And for years now, he's actually been facilitating workshops on relationships and family. So it's safe to say that Mark has a passion for healthy relationships, for helping people develop and live in healthy relationships in their own lives. And Mark has just finished a book called Relationship Matters. So today, he and I are going to be talking about his book, but also about his inspiration for the book and what he hopes people will get out of reading this book. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Kevin. It's so great to be here with you.
Mark, I think most of us would simply agree right off the bat that relationships matter, even though that's not quite the title of your book, but we have no argument with that. But most of us don't write a book about this. Can you tell us a bit about your journey and what brought you to the point that you decided to write a book about this?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a home that was quite strict, a lot of anger, and I think I grew up in a way that I just wasn't taught how to relate. You were kind of told what to do, and not really given much opportunity to discover. And so because of that environment, I grew up not learning how to relate to people. And in fact, the book starts with a story of me sitting in a jail because I had been picked up for some of the activity I was involved with because of those broken relationships in my life. And I was sitting there wondering, like, how did I get there? How did I find myself in this situation? And I realized in my healing journey that it was because I never learned how to relate to others. And because of that, I never learned how to relate to myself. Mm. And so there is this thing happening in my journey. And then, of course, as I I owned businesses and whatnot, and I had those defining moments or those divine appointments, if you will. And it was when my wife and I actually were separated because of my addiction, because of my struggles in relating. We weren't doing well. And so what happened was, it's an amazing story, but we both came to faith 1,000 kilometers apart on the same morning. And wow. That changed our lives. And so that started our healing journey. And what I realized is that relationships are core to everything. It really, whether it's family, neighbors, friends, business, church, whatever it is, everything flows out of relationship. And it became more and more apparent to me that even, early in my ministry, we started a youth center and a youth church, and we worked with young people that were in crisis. And a lot of times we would joke and say, these young people, we help fix them up, and then we send them back home to be everything get undone, you know, that we did. And it became very apparent to me that we, that families needed help in learning some practical tools and principles of relating to one another. And so that's where the passion for writing the book came from, is all my years of helping families through crisis, helping families through relational crisis. And, you know as well as I do in pastoring, you're going to have a lot of those opportunities. But what I realized was, is there really wasn't, although there, you know, the self-help industry is a $1 billion industry, I didn't see a lot of just practical blueprints for people to follow and make it simple. And so this book is very simple. It's not long, but it's very practical and laid out in a way that is easy to get through together.
Mark, why do you think we need blueprints to help us in this? I mean, isn't that interesting, right? The things that are the most natural for us in life that we're all involved in can be the source of our biggest struggles. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, you know, it's true. I often say to people, your relationships can be the greatest reward or the greatest pain in your life, depending on how healthy they are. You know, a lot of my pain in my early years came from broken relationships, from unhealthy relationships. And so, and it's interesting to me because I grew up in the church. I grew up in, you know, hearing about faith. Obviously, many people would say the Bible is a great manual on families and on having healthy relationships. The problem is, how many get an opportunity to read it from that perspective? How many people would read it? And so I had a real heart to help the community. Like, you know, in church, we should be talking about these things. I find a lot of times churches don't want to touch those hot button issues and subjects that that can get messy around relationships. And so, of course, I wanted to make sure that, you know, that we were doing that. And I think that we need these blueprints because although we were created to be in relationship, created for relationship, I think that that is why that's where the battle is. That's the center of the battle for most people's relationship. If you think about it, you know, somebody who's struggling with addiction as I did, you know, that's, it's not the addiction that is the problem. That's the medication. Mm-hmm. It's something deeper within you that is broken and painful. And many times that comes from relationships that haven't walked out in a healthy way. You know, I know for myself, that's, you know, was my experience. I had a lot of rules. I had a lot of, you know, downward pressure, if you will, on my life, but I wasn't taught how to process that, how to relate, you know, through that, how to communicate through it. There's some basic principles to relationships that people just have never been given. It's interesting. In some of the workshops I teach, I teach many different workshops, but all of them kind of center around the blockages to having healthy relationships. So, for example, managing your anger, or one I call shadow boxing, which is dealing with shame. You know, and the Relationship Matters course itself, which is where this book came out of. You know, I'll be talking to the people, and I'll say something that I think is quite actually, you know, simple, quite profound. Like, you know, for example, like we should honor one another. I'll say something like that. And they're like, wow, like we've just never heard it put that way. You know, I'm thinking to myself, this is pretty basic, you know, stuff. But the fact is that generation over generation by generation by generation, Kevin, we have not passed on those relating principles that help you have healthy relationships. It's just something families just seem to struggle talking about. You know, communication, things like communication, you know, are so strained at times, and they don't know how to express their heart or their feelings. You know, I talk about a principle in there, you know, even when I'm doing strength-based parenting course, I do, I talk about, you know, you have to separate behavior from personhood, but it's not natural for us to do. When we get angry, we tend to label the child with the behavior that they're doing. I'll give you an example. My son one time, you know, in his early teens, we caught him in a few lies. Now, a lot of times, you know, in anger, we might say, "You're such a liar," you know. Right. Well, I'm attacking his personhood. I'm actually, you know, not building him up or teaching him you know, anything on that. I'm just accusing him or calling him, and I'm labeling him. And rather than that, I sat down with him and said, you know, son, you are such a caring and compassionate person. You're not a liar. So why are you lying? You see, you contrast that behavior from their personhood. And these are sound fairly simple, but it's not, you know, I always say simple, not easy, right? They're simple principles in this book, but they're not always easy to live out. So I give a little bit of help with that.
Well, I really appreciate your thoughts on that and resonate it. I grew up in the church and left for a while, took a bit of a break. But I echo your experience. I mean, I remember Bible studies where it seemed like actually people were really good about talking around things, but not entering into it. You know, and it always struck me as ironic that we have a relational faith, but we're so impoverished relationally. I remember talking to this one older gentleman in the church, and he was really mad at me for some reason. This is when I was a pastor. And he started yelling, and I said, why are you angry? And he says, I'm not angry. and to me, that was just, you know, one of those watershed moments where it's like, well, we just don't know ourselves.
Yeah.
I really think you're onto something with this, because we do need a guide. We need something down to earth.
Right. You know, I'm calling it a blueprint, you know, and I used that imagery, by the way. The book is built on a syllabus of, if you want to build a strong house, you know, you're good at carpentry and building, Kevin, and you understand this. If you want a good house, you need at least three clear things. You need a healthy foundation, you need a strong framework, and you need a sturdy roof. Yeah. If you have those three things, you're going to have a house that will stand the test of time. It'll stand in storms. You know, everything else is dressing, decoration, room, division, all that kind of stuff, but you need the framework. And so the book is written that way. If you want a strong family or a strong relationship, you need to have a healthy foundation. You need a strong framework. That framework is an agreement on how we're going to work together, how we're going to live together, move together in this relationship. And you need a sturdy roof. And the sturdy roof is one that is not talked about very often, because what a sturdy roof is a covering. Now, we know in church language, a covering means lording it over.
Right.
That's been our experience. That was my experience growing up. I didn't have I had an authoritarian that was lording it over, but that didn't actually protect me. You see, the true meaning of authority, the true meaning of a proper covering is actually protection, protecting the house from the elements. So right. Protecting your relationships from the elements, the storms of life that can take place. And in the book, I kind of, you know, talk about how when you invite people in for accountability into your life, into your family life, like your pastor, like someone, you know, a friend or a parent, somebody, you invite them to hold you accountable to what you're doing is you're putting shingles in the roof. Huh. And when you put those shingles in the roof, the more you have, the more sturdy your roof is. And so I talk about the reason we don't is because, like in my case, I didn't understand what authority was. You see, there's two kinds of authority. There's positional authority, and then there's relational authority. And I'll give you an example. If you have a teacher, they have a positional authority. So those students have to listen and learn from that teacher. But I've been in many, many, many classrooms through the years teaching the Heroes program, which I co-developed with Jack Toth. And I could walk in and within 5 minutes tell you whether that teacher had those kids, you know, whether it was relational or positional authority. The teacher that goes to the relational authority will get to know the kids. They'll get to know what makes them tick, what makes them learn. They'll pull out of them things that you can't pull out just by having a position of a teacher. And that's a relational authority. And so in the book, I talk about the difference in the contrast. And when somebody who is in a positional authority, like a father, like a mother, actually takes the time and spends the time developing the relational authority, they will have a much better relationship, and they will teach their children how to have healthy relationships themselves.
Okay.
And at the same time, protect them.
Is one better than the other, or are they different?
I think we need both in our life.
Okay.
But I think that one definitely positional authority won't in itself, develop you or build you up. It may protect you in some police officer, you know, they have a positional authority. They've been given a badge and a gun and a uniform to keep the peace, to protect us from criminals, you know, and so they have a role to play. And so their position alone protects us because they have that authority. However, I will say this, that those police officers who understand their role and their authority and use it relationally will actually be able to help us even further and protect us. And you can tell the difference. You can tell the difference between someone who walks in positional authority or relational authority. Think of it in our context as pastors. We can carry a positional authority, and it is important in the life of any organization to have positional authority. But it's when that positional person in positional authority learns to relate well, they're going to have a way better culture. They're going to have a healthy relational culture in that organization, in that family, in that neighborhood, wherever it might be.
Okay, so let's see if I'm on the right track here. So as a parent, I have positional authority, but to be a really healthy parent, I need to have positional and relationship authority in the relationship. And exactly. I guess that would go for leadership in whatever capacity. You want both, I think. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying that, absolutely. And what I found is that when we, work at that relational authority, you know, my kids will tell you even now, they're all adults now and married, and they have, we have two grandkids, and our family have amazing relationships. We all get along really well. And, you know, we haven't been without problems, but we work through them, and there's a really strong bond in our family. And, you know, when they were little, they didn't just do things because I said to, because I had the positional authority. They'll tell you today, they did things for me, and even still today, do things for me because of the relational authority. Hmm. And so I want my kids to learn how to make good decisions. I don't want to just tell them what their decision should be. And the way you do that is by having the relationship where you can actually communicate and dialogue with them in a way that helps them be open and free to talk about whatever needs to be talked about. And so that, yeah, the positional and relational authority is absolutely critical to a healthy relational culture. And so, and I think we just haven't talked about it much. You know, I know for me, because I had a bad experience with authority when I was younger, I rejected all authority. Well, if you reject all authority, you leave yourself open. You leave yourself uncovered. You have no protection for your heart anymore. You've removed it. And so that you know, makes you vulnerable. And so, but people abuse authority. And when authority is abused, that's why it's so damaging. And when authority is abused, the relational impact is probably greater than any other. You can't, as a human being, you can't as a person even relate to yourself properly, because that's what happened to me. When that authority was abused, I didn't know how to relate to myself anymore. I didn't know what to think, because I was told one thing and something else happened. And so now I'm lost, right? As a, mm-hmm. as a kid, as a teenager trying to figure it out. So what did I do? I went the path of least resistance, which ended me up in drugs and with the wrong crowd and a life of misery until I came to faith. And so that was, it's so important. I can't stress it enough. And I tell a story in the book, and I share it quite often. I think this will help Kevin to illustrate. When my son-in-law, Zach, came to ask me to court my daughter, Jaylene, which, by the way, was super rare. So I was a bit taken back. Like, he got good points right off the bat, just asking me to date her. So he was a fine young man, and still, yeah. And he still is. They've been married 11 years now. So he's obviously took my advice. But when he first came to talk to me about that, something fell out of my mouth, which I now teach all the time. And it was very spontaneous. But I told him, I said, listen, my role as Jaylene's father is twofold. For my daughters, my role is to protect their heart and to protect their virtue. Mm. And I do that through a strong relationship. And I do that because I love them, and I, you know, my role is to protect them. I'm a covering in their life. I want to protect them. And so you're actually asking me to join me in that effort.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really appreciate that. And I want you to know, because you've taken this step, I'm going to share that responsibility with you. But I want you to understand, you're going to have to prove to me that you can do it well. And as you do that, as you court her and date her, one day you're going to come to me and ask for her hand in marriage. And then you're asking me to give you the lion's share of that role. Because you see, a husband role is to protect their wife's heart and virtue. Imagine if we got that, just that, you know, in relationships, how much stronger they would be, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was very profoundly impacted, and we were, you know, friends with his parents and have known them for years. And they told me that it really impacted him. And it was because I shared the authority with him. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a positional authority. He's just dating her.
Yeah.
But I gave delegated shared authority in a sense to protect her heart and her virtue. And that really kept him in check, especially, you know, he'll say now, we'll joke about it, but he'll say, you know, if he wanted to kiss her for a little too long, my voice would come into his head. It's like, yes, mission accomplished.
Good for you.
Anyway, but that gives you an illustration of what I mean by this and how powerful it is. And so in the book, it's the last section, and it just talks about that. And I don't think people talk about this very much. And that's why you ask me, why do we need a guide or a blueprint? Mm-hmm. I just think these are things that maybe, you know, listen, there's lots of relationship books out there. There's lots of, you know, I'm certainly not the inventor of, you know, God's the inventor of relationship, but I'm just, but what I've done is I believe he gave me a nugget, and I felt a responsibility to, you know, to share what I learned in my healing journey. And by the way, I got it wrong a lot more than I got it right. And
right. Like a lot of us.
Still working at it.
You know, a little earlier you said relationships are core to everything. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if you can expand on that a bit and talk about how they shape us for good or for bad.
Yeah, well, I think we learn about our identity through relationships. So what is influencing us? What, you know, who are we allowing to shape us and to form us? And of course, in a faith context, the first place we need to learn to relate is to God. And when we relate to him and learn how to relate to him and allow him to relate to us, that, you know, that we're going to get a healthy sense of who we are because he created us. We're his masterpiece. Mm. But when our vertical one's out of sync, then our horizontal ones, that's where we start to get our cue. And when you have, here's the problem. When you have a broken relationship, or you've had, I call them relational messages that have been negative towards you as a child. Like I heard so many times, you know, I was a bad kid because I behaved badly, right? I was hyperactive. And so you're hyperactive, you're disrespectful. I had an experience when my dad was a pastor as well. And I had an experience when I was pretty squiggly kid. I think probably today they'd maybe diagnose me with ADD. Mm-hmm. But I was a squiggly kid and my mind was always going, and you know, I couldn't sit still. And so my mom would grab the inside of my thigh and pinch it if I was acting up too much.
Oh, ouch.
Well, this one time she got a little too much. And in the middle of my dad's message, I screamed out, "Ow, stop pinching me."
Huh.
Well, of course, her, you know, finger and thumb went to my ear and she dragged me out. And they used to have a kind of an open coat closet that they'd make me stand in to make me think about my actions, which actually just served to humiliate me in front of the whole congregation. Mm, but yeah. This one day, this lady who seemed like a giant to me, I was just a little kid, but you know, of course came to know later she wasn't. She was quite short, actually. She came and she put her finger in my face and wagged her finger at me and said, "You are a disgrace to your father."
Oh, no.
And I remember thinking to myself, you know, you want to see disgrace? I'll show you disgrace.
Mm.
Right. And so I acted out. I started acting out as much as I could. I was the hellion that, you know, I was the typical PK, you know, mess, right? And so what I was, those relationships shaped who I thought I was. You see, that's the point you were asked your question. Mm-hmm. I was like, relationships give us signals. They send relational messages, tell us who we are. And I work with so many people, so many families that are in crisis. And it's amazing to hear them when I start, you know, trying to ask questions and opening them up about their relationship. I have a saying, perception is reality. It's not always actuality. Hmm. Perception is reality. It's not always actuality. And so many of our beliefs, so many of our personality shaping is based on perception and not actuality. And so, yes, relationships are central to everything, because when they're not healthy, it affects the way I think about myself. And if it affects the way I think about myself, then it affects how I treat others. Mm-hmm. So I often say self-esteem is what you feel about yourself. Self-image is how you see yourself. Self-dignity is how you treat yourself. If you don't feel good about who you are, who God created you to be, you're not going to see yourself in the right light. And if you don't see yourself in the right light, you can't see others in the right light. You can't feel, if you don't feel good about yourself, you're not going to feel good about others. If you don't treat yourself well, if you can't love yourself in a, not a prideful way, but in the biblical way of loving that God created us the way we are, then it's hard to treat others well. And that's why I believe relationship is central to everything. Mm. Because a good, healthy relationship can have somebody flourishing in their life. And when I've seen healing come in relationships, and I saw it in my own, listen, my wife and I were very dysfunctional. I was a terrible husband. I was a terrible dad. But I'm so grateful that I came to faith and I started a healing journey. I'm so grateful that that happened, because what happened was, is our family began to heal. And while it was healing, we learned how to have healthy relationships. And I never wanted my kids to experience what I experienced. And so, you know, of course, when we say that, sometimes that's exactly where we go. And I did it first. But when I came to the relationship with God, and I came into relationship with my wife, a healthy one, and with my kids, everything started flowing out of that, and healing started flowing. I started to look at myself differently. I started to see my value. You know, our family vision statement is, you know, to reveal the value every person possesses and to reveal the value of Christ to every person. Mm. And that has been a guiding light for us. And that's, by the way, in the second section of the book, Strong Framework, that's what I do. I actually help people in the book. I tell you how to build a vision and mission statement for your family. Mm. You know, it dawned on me a few years ago, organizations have vision and mission statements.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Companies have vision. And why do they have vision and mission statements? It's, those are riverbanks that keep them going in the same direction. Why don't families? Why don't families have vision and mission statements? Or you know, and so I started doing that. And it started here in Kelowna, actually. I got a call, you know, I'm at the bridge there, and we have a school, an elementary school next door. And I got a call from the principal one day, and they said, we got this little guy. He came to our out-of-school care program, and he says, you know, he's acting out. He's not going to last in school. We're going to have to kick him out. I think he was grade five, four. And he said, we're in a staff meeting, and somebody mentioned that you're good with kids, and maybe you could have a talk with him. So I said, yes, I help families in crisis and whatnot. And so they called me in on it. And so I started working with this little guy and the family. And he would have full-on meltdown type, temper tantrums. And long story short, as I discovered, why he did that was because when his parents started fighting, he got scared. And he got scared of what his dad might do to his mom because of experience and history, and he would act up so that he could take the attention away from his parents, and they would focus on him. So he'd go into his room and destroy it. Wow. And so that he learned that behavior. So at school, if something wasn't going his way or there was tension, he would bring the tension on himself through negative behavior.
Yeah.
makes sense, doesn't it?
It does.
So anyway, what I did with the family eventually was I helped them develop a vision and mission statement and a set of values and a purpose. I wanted them to discover, what is your purpose as a family on this earth? What are your guiding principles in life, your values, and what is your vision and mission as a family? And we worked with the whole family. He had two siblings, and we included them all, and we put this plan together, and they made a poster, and they put it in their dining room wall. And on there, it had the vision, the mission, and the values. And a few months go by, mom and dad are starting to escalate, fight starts to happen. And this little guy walks in the kitchen, took both their hands, walked them into the dining room, pointed at the poster, and walked away. Didn't say a word. And they both started laughing, the parents, of course, and they said, "We know what he's telling us. We're not
disrupted that.
Because we're living below what we've set as a family vision, right?" And so that was so powerful to me. And I hadn't started writing the book yet, but I remember telling somebody, if I ever write a book, that's going in.
Absolutely.
And so that's what's happened. It's in the second section, I take people through the process of setting up a vision, mission statement, values. And that provides a framework. So now the family is pulling together rather than drifting apart. See, many relationships drift apart because we don't intentionally work them. And so, I use the illustration of we can jump in the ocean with two dinghies and relate to each other, but eventually the current's going to pull us apart.
Yeah.
Or we can jump in where there's riverbanks, there's synergy, the water is flowing, we can actually go in there and we're going to go in the same direction whether we try to or not. And so vision and mission statement helps that way. And so that's kind of, that gives you a little bit of, so it's just so powerful because now we're moving in the same direction and it really brings unity to a family. Mm. And the more you can include the kids, age appropriate, of course, the more powerful it is.
Well, that's a great story.
Yeah.
How do you think healthy relationships help us to live better lives?
Well, I think because everything flows from there. When you have a healthy relationship, your mood's better, your attitude towards life's better. Mm-hmm. I think, when you have healthy relationships in your, particularly if you start from the family and work out, you go to work, you're happier. It's been proven that productivity in companies that take care of their people, that take, provide counseling, provide care, look after their mental health. And I'm now, entering into the field of relationship management. I really believe that if you want a healthy workforce, help them have healthy relationships. Mm-hmm. Because the unhealthy relationships come into the workforce. You can't turn it on and off. I mean, you can to some degree, I guess, but at some point in time, it's going to show up, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that, your view of others is going to change when you have healthy relationships at home. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have more grace for people. You'll have more patience for people. So that's how I think you have a better life. I think when you have healthy relationships, you flourish in every area of life. Mm-hmm. And by the way, even from a business point of view, you're going to see more business and more loyal customers when you treat them well, when you relate to them well, when you're healthy in your communication with them, right?
So Mark's book is called Relationship Matters, not Relationships Matter, which would be a good title too, but it actually is Relationship Matters. Mark, when is it coming out?
It's like a week. Well, depending on when this airs, it could be already out, depending on when you air this. But literally as we're speaking right now, we're within a week or two. So it should be 1st of March. It will be launched. You can go to my website, markgordon.ca, and if it's either pre-register there or it'll be ready to, it'll have links on there to go buy it on Amazon, okay. All the different places. I'm also going to, it will be available to bookstores, and I'll specifically go to the ones in Kelowna and see if I'll do some, signings and launch parties and stuff like that. But it will be available on all the platforms, ebook, paperback, hardcover, awesome. the whole works.
So this podcast will be released on February 25th, 2021. I almost said 2020, 2021. That's right, isn't it?
2021. Yeah.
So I asked this of all my guests. I wonder if you could tell us about some things that have helped you live a better life, in particular, a book that you've read that's impacted you that you would like to share with others or recommend to other people.
Yeah, there's a book called Replenish by Lance Witt, and the subtitle is Leading from a Healthy Soul. And that one was really impactful on me several years ago. Probably saved me from burnout because it checked down why I do what I do. And the closer you can get to the authentic call in your life and the authentic why, you know, your purpose, the closer you get there, the more you can do it from a place of rest. And then you don't mind replenishing when you need to. My identity is not wrapped up in what I do. And then I can take the time. So Replenish was an excellent book by Lance Witt.
Check that one out. And we'll put that in our show notes so our listeners can see that. And also, what's a habit or discipline that you've developed that's made a difference in your life?
I think, you know, sticking with the relationship theme, I think one of the disciplines that I've had, and I've had to work at this, by the way, so this has been a discipline, not truly in the sense of the word, but if I value relationships, I need to be better at checking in with people and checking on them. So I've developed a pattern of just, you know, shooting a text off, making a phone call, sending
a card. Good.
My wife is amazing at just like sending a card. So God will put somebody on her heart and she'll send a card. And so we are very proactive with that in our family. And I check in on my kids regularly. You know, the closest the relationship is, the more I check in. But I really try to do that, even be conscious. And sometimes I'll just go through the Rolodex. Well, we don't have those anymore, but yeah, electronically.
What is that? What are you talking about?
Yeah, or flip through Facebook friends, you know, and or Instagram, follow, you know, whatever. And just if somebody jumps out at me, what I've done, here's the discipline. If somebody's name or, you know, jumps out at me in any way, whether it's a thought, whether I see them online, whatever it is, I will stop what I'm doing and I'll shoot the message in the moment. Because I used to say, oh, I'll do it later. I'll get to it. I should reach out to Kevin. I haven't seen him for a while. And then I would just, time would go by and I wouldn't. So yeah. The discipline I put in place is when I get the unction, I'm going to count that as a nudge from God.
That's a really good one for me because I'm a little bit, even with close friends, a bit out of sight, out of mind. So that would be a good discipline for me to look at.
I've had to work at it because I always say I'm really good in the power of presence, like when I'm with you. But sometimes when we're at a distance, I don't always think of you. And so I had to put that in. But you know, I'm not perfect at it by any stretch. But the discipline I put in place is if someone comes to mind, I'm going to do it right now.
Intentionally.
I'm not going to probably do it later.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing about your book. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on and I hope it helps. And I hope your listeners get a chance to buy it. And I really hope it will be a blessing to them. That's why I wrote it.
Awesome. So, hey, thank you for listening. And I hope that you feel better equipped to deal with life than you did before. And it's been great to talk about things that help us live better lives. I look forward to connecting with you on our next podcast. And until the next time, keep the faith and live in hope.
Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe so that you can catch all our future episodes. You can search for us as FBC Perspective on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.